All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. Thank you for joining me on this Saturday, June 9th, 2018. Pleased to be joined in studio by Steve Goldman. How you doing, Steve?
Doing great, Anthony. It's one of our favorite weeks of the year, U.S. Open week, and certainly a special week for the local area as the iconic Shinnecock hosting once again. It's going to be a fantastic event.
I mean, just think about what we have going on in the area.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, we got the Subway Series. We've got Belmont. We've got Quaker Ridge and the Curtis Cup. We got Shinnecock next week. I mean,
you got the ShopRite Classic, down in Atlantic
New Jersey.
City.
Yep.
So there's a lot of, and of course, friend of the program, Annie Park.
Yep.
Three shots back after the first round yesterday. So, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of events going on. Of course, you have the PGA Tour stop in Memphis. Some notables of it. Well, obviously, Dustin Johnson being a 10 under par leading the field. And, of course, our requisite Phil Mickelson mention. He's a six shot back. Tied with Steve Schricker, who qualified for the U.S. Open last week. And one of your favorite days, I know, which is which they call golf's longest day.
Yep.
When everybody has to play their 36-hole sectional qualifier. So that was impressive. And, of course, two other notables at Memphis. Former amateur Scottie Scheffler, he's at minus one, and he's tied with current amateur Braden Thornberry. Both Scottie and Braden were Walker Cup members with their victorious campaign last year at LA Country Club.
Sure.
Including
our friend Stuart Hagestad, who will be joining us shortly, and so we're looking forward to talking to him.
I can't wait to talk to him. I mean, you know, if there's somebody that epitomizes amateur golf.
Yep.
It's got to be Stuart.
Yep.
And it's going to be a lot of fun talking to him, because you know he's had a decorated career so far, and now he's qualified for Shinnecock, and I can't wait to hear his thoughts about how he feels and the anticipation he's feeling coming up to this week.
Yeah, it's going to be a special week. So let's get to our first break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorcher.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891, and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. I'm Anthony. He's Steve. And on the line is Stuart Hagestad. How you doing, Stuart? I mean, I kind of feel like I already know the answer to that question, but what's going on this morning?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
What are you doing this week, Stuart? You got any plans?
I'm down the Hamptons. I got a couple buddies coming in town. I think we're just going to kick in and enjoy the weather and maybe play a little golf.
Play a few rounds, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some pretty good golf in the area there.
Yeah.
I want to start with, before we get to this year, now that you've put some time and some distance and between yourself and 2016 and 2017, in 2016 you're amateur champion. You were a mid-am champ for the USGA. You're a Walker Cupper, and then you went to the Masters. Obviously, didn't make the cut at the US Open. So, when you think about last year in 2016, those campaigns, how has it prepared you for this week alone?
Yeah, I mean, last year was obviously a dream come true. I accomplished a lot of goals that I'd kind of set for myself. But when you look at an amateur career, are a lot of things that you'd like to accomplish. You know, obviously qualifying for the Masters and playing well, qualifying for the U.S. Open, didn't quite play as well, having the opportunity to play on the Walker Cup team. It was amazing. So to be able to kind of sit back and reflect as soon as it was all done, it really I wanted to kind of, you know, marinate, you know, on the success that I had had, but at the same time, reflect and, you know, create new goals for the future. And, you know, I kind of identified what my next goal would be, and that's obviously to try and align myself, you know, with the opportunity to maybe play and represent the United States again in a couple of years. And I think, you know, just qualifying this week is obviously a great step in the right direction, but, you know, it's we're looking forward to preparing for another major championship and hopefully going out and, you know, playing great and giving us a chance to make some noise, you know, next week at Shinnecock.
Well, let's set the record straight. You said you played well at the Masters. Let's just be clear. You ended up tied for 36th. You were the first mid-am qualifier to ever make the cut, and, of course, you were low-am. So, I mean, I know you're being a little modest here, so I just want to set the record straight. I mean, look, my dream is to maybe one day just to see the golf course. I mean, I imagine a dream, obviously a dream of someone of your caliber is to play there. I couldn't possibly imagine every thought that's going through your head, just even the practice rounds and being surrounded by friends and family and then playing well on top of it. I'm just curious, how are you able to sort of rein in all of that energy and putting it towards just playing golf?
Yeah, no, I mean, just, you know, in respect to that week, it was such a special week, and my birthday is April 10th, so that time of year is always, for some reason, it's always kind of stuck out to me. My first Masters I really remember was, you know, when Tiger won in 97 by, like, all the shots. I don't know what it was like 12 or 11 or
yeah.
something.
It was a boat race, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was like him and everyone else. No, so like it was just always a special time of year for me. And, you know, going down there the first time, it was like, I just want to go play golf. I want to see it. I want to see everything. You know, I want to see where Tiger hit his chip and, you know, where, you know, Jack made his putt and Phil hit his shot and, you know, Bubba hit his on 10 and so on and so forth. And, as soon as that was done, it's funny, like, it's almost like a gear was gonna switch that, you know, instead of feeling like you were basically in an art museum, it was more just like, okay, like this is how you play the golf course. Your mindset kind of switches, and it's, you know, how can I best, you know, play to give myself the best opportunity to. So this one's tough for me, what I'm about to say. So you hear guys like, you know, especially amateurs or, you know, guys that are given sponsors exemptions, and they sit there and they're, you know, near the lead on Sunday, and, you know, they kind of say, you know, if I play well tomorrow, you know, I've got enough good stuff to win. And everyone kind of rolls their eyes and they say, oh, you know, just you're happy to be there and so on. It's like, well, there's a big difference between when you're preparing for a tournament, preparing to win and preparing to make the cut, or preparing to just, you know, go out and do the best you can. If you go and you prepare to win, you prepare at a different level, and it prepares you better for that week. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, as I look at Shinnecock, you know, going into the Masters, I like weirdly had this thing in my head. It's like, you know, we're going to go out and my best stuff is good enough to compete with anyone else out there. Whether that's true or not, you genuinely have to believe that, because if you don't, like, you're already starting behind the eight ball.
Well, I mean, that's a lesson, not only golf, but I think that's a lesson in life. I mean, you really have to believe in yourself, whatever your skill is, whatever your talent is.
Yeah.
If the belief isn't there, then the body's not going to follow.
Totally. I mean, let's, like, use it in business. Like, you know, you go and do the biggest pitch of your life. Like, what, you're just happy to be there? No. Like, you
exactly.
have to believe that if you don't get that, you know, that book or that sale or whatever it is, you know, like, that's not good enough. So, I don't know. That was kind of my mentality going into it, and that's the same one I'm trying to take into this week.
Yeah, what was it about Augusta National that gave you that confidence? Well, I mean, obviously there was a part of it was your game was in, you were obviously in good form, but what was it about the golf course that suited your eye that gave you that sort of I guess crystallized that confidence that you had?
Oh, for sure. Well, two things. One, just the place is, whenever I, you know, the first time I kind of walked in the door, I just kind of got chills and had a special feeling. And I don't know if it was just watching every Masters religiously since I was four or just kind of being on the grounds and seeing a lot of tee shots and, you know, having it fit my eye. That week, it's funny, I've told a lot of friends and, you know, anyone that's asked, it's far from the best I've ever played, you know, as far as I've ever hit it and, you know, putted and I shot a pretty good number last year and, or a couple years ago in stroke play qualifying at the Met-Am, but it's by far the best I've ever scored. I mean,
right.
Under the conditions of, you know, playing in front of 15,000 people and who knows how many on TV, friends and family and all the pressure that was led into it. I really did a good job that week of just getting in the hole. And I know that's not the answer you wanted to hear, but
yeah, no, that's one. No, that's, I mean, that's obviously the name of the game. It doesn't, that's for sure. I just wasn't sure if there was a part of that golf course that sort of fit your game per se. But you know, at the end of the day, it's the number on the card. And obviously as the week went on, you were only filled with more confidence.
Totally. And it's funny, like as the week went on, you know, I was the most nervous on like Tuesday and Wednesday and the first few holes on Thursday. Like as the week went on, you know, I was kind of, you begin to feel more comfortable because if you're not playing, you know, it's one thing if, you know, you tee it up and you remember guests and you go out in the Derby, you know, with 45 carts around the green. It's another when you're playing in a major championship.
Sure.
I mean, shoot, I'll admit it. Like, you know, I was nervous too.
Right.
You know, so the more time that you're in front of crowds and that you're in front of, you know, just people and friends and, you know, you kind of have that confidence like, hey, like, it's just golf. Like, you're going to go out there and, you know, you're prepared the right way and, you know, This is just like any other time. There's just a bunch of people watching. That's all it is.
Who gave you the best advice while you were during tournament week? Former player or somebody that you know you were with that week that helped you the most?
Yeah, probably two people. I played a practice round with Ben Crenshaw and a friend from LA who's a member down there.
He's pretty good.
That was pretty good. And that, yeah, I mean, just like having him and Carl Jackson go around with my caddy JD and. You know, we spent some time in the yardage book and on the greens, and he gave me a ton of things to think about. But more than anything else, he was just like, listen, like, you're a good player hitting good shots, and I see the way you putt it and you roll it really well, and I think you're going to play great this week. And just, like, having someone like him, you know, it's fatherly and, you know, like, I don't know, like, whatever. But
Yeah.
He was just like, hey, like, I really think, you know, I got a good feeling about you this week. And it was just, that was really cool to, it was just very soothing. And then the other one was Adam Scott. We played a practice round together on Tuesday, and I feel like I was probably just annoying him at some point. But I was just like, you know, where's the miss here? Where do you hit it here? What do you think about here? And finally, like, I think it was like on 17, he didn't stop, but he pretty much did. And he just looked at me. He's like, listen, man, I've won here before. You know, I'm a Masters champion. The first tee is the most nervous I get over any tee shot all year. You know, you hit a lot of great shots to be able just to get here. You can do it again. There's just some places out here where, you know, you got to reach down and just really just dig deep and hit good ones because there's nowhere to miss. You just got to hit a good one if you don't accept the consequences. That's fair.
We're talking to Stuart Hagestad, the 23rd ranked amateur golfer in the world and, of course, member of Deepdale Country Club and, of course, former USC Trojan. I want to transition into the summer because now you have a great week at the Masters. And then you get to the U.S. Open, and unfortunately it didn't work out for you there. But I'm wondering, is it possible to channel what happened at Augusta into Erin Hills, or is it just a completely different mindset when you're trying to play at a U.S. Open versus playing at the Masters?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when I got to the U.S. Open, after what had happened at the Masters, I was kind of laughing about this. You know, I read most of the stuff that's said on Twitter, and, you know, obviously much of the attention was on, you know, guys that were playing, you know, that I guess you could say play for a living. But, you know, it was funny, like, a lot of people would say, like, you know, Stuart has an opportunity to, you know, be low AM, and can he do it again, and this and that. And I was like, listen, it's just another golf tournament. These boys are all really good, and it's not just, you know, the boys in the top 10. It's not just Ricky and Justin and Jordan and Brooks ended up winning, obviously. Like, there's a reason that a kid like Aaron Wise, when he transferred, you know, to the PGA Tour after being in college and he left after 2 years, that he won so quickly on tour. Like, everyone's really, really good. And it's double the field. You know, the Masters is like 85 people.
Right.
U.S. Open's like double that.
Right.
So, you know, you're going out and it's not just, you almost arguably have to play better. So, you know, the honest answer is I just didn't have my best stuff that week. And, you know, I didn't putt as well as I could have. And, unfortunately, in major championships, you just don't have a tremendous amount of room for mistakes. And, you know, I made a couple too many mistakes that week, and it was a short one. But, you know, it doesn't, I would say that, like, I didn't put, you know, excess pressure on myself. Like, I prepared the same way for it. I thought as highly of my game, you know, leading into the week as I did at the Masters, if not higher. That first tee shot was nowhere near as nerve-wracking as it was, you know, the one a couple months before. I think I'm not going to overthink this one. It was just, I don't know, didn't play as well.
It was just golf. I mean, yeah, that's really all it is.
Well,
yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like the media and whoever, like, overthinks this one, it's like, I don't know, just we had an expression at the Walker Cup. It's like, we'll just play better. Pretty simple.
Right.
Well, speaking of that and transitioning just before it, we have the U.S. Amateur, which is basically in your old stomping grounds. It's at Bel Air and Riviera. And unfortunately, you just miss out on
what I just said.
Unqualifying for match play. But then a couple weeks later, you're at L.A. Country Club, really your old stomping grounds. You make the Walker Cup team. And I know Anthony and I last year, when we were previewing the Walker Cup, we're looking at each other and looking at the guys in this team, and we're thinking, there's no way this team is going to lose. There's no way it's even going to be competitive. And yet, and of course, you know, as we said, it's golf.
We had a really good team. Yes, we had a bunch of kids that are going to play a lot up for a living and make a whole bunch of money and win a whole bunch of cool things.
You absolutely did. And some of them even qualifying for the U.S. Open, namely, we mentioned before, Braden Thornberry. But you, on the Saturday singles match against Jack Singh Brar, and then you come back, and then you beat him on, of all other things, a rules violation to end up getting the clinching point. So I can't imagine what that would be like, being at your home course, playing in, let's say, the most prestigious amateur event that there is, and being able to be the one to secure the championship.
Well, let's be really clear about this. You know, if Braden hadn't gone out second and boat raced his guy like 6-4, the timing wouldn't have been such that I was able to win it. So you got to give credit to him for that to come. You know.
But. All right. Well, the next time I talk to Braden, I'll give him credit.
he definitely gets credit. You know, what's the expression? Last out, first in. That's pretty strong.
Yeah.
Hey, that week was incredible. It was that was everything that I was thinking about and building towards for 2 years. I mean, I woke up every day for 2 years, you know, going to work or playing golf. I mean, it didn't really matter. It was like, what can I do today to give myself the best opportunity to try and represent the United States on the Walker Cup team? And I think a lot of that same, you know, mentality is kind of returned, you know, as I look towards the one in a couple of years. But I mean, that's a long ways away, and we don't need to go into that. But, that was an incredible week. Spider was an amazing captain. I mean, he had so many incredible experiences. That team was not only so good, but that golf course, I mean, if you had to really tailor make a golf course for Americans, you'd have a course with little to no wind that was super long with really relatively big fairways and penal rough if you missed it, and then greens that were close to rock hard, rolling at 15s and, you know, tuck pins. Because if you get that group into a ball striking contest with, it's not picking on, you know,
right,
the GB and I guys at all. It's just,
but it's lights,
you know,
out.
Their short games are so good, and they chip and pitch it and putt it so well. But if you get them into a ball striking contest from 160 yards out, like, you know, I was playing Jack, and I'm a mid-am, an old guy, so to speak, and I was hitting, you know, 8 or 9 iron, he's hitting 7 or 6 iron. Like, over the course of 2 rounds, you know, on a really hard, firm, and fast golf course, like, I'm going to have a slight advantage.
Yep.
So.
And for the record, you mentioned the team, so let's just recap who was on that team. So
yeah, all right.
We can remind our listeners.
Go ahead. Coffee. Me, Braden Thornberry, Cameron Champ, Will Zalatoris, Scotty Scheffler, Doug Gim, Maverick McNealy, Colin Morikawa, Norman Jeong, and Doc Redman. Boom.
Boom.
Nice.
There it is.
That's a great way to close out the first segment.
That's it. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll have more with Stuart Hagerstedt. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Hi, I'm Dr. Frank Rossi of Cornell University. As the stewards of New York's golf courses, superintendents are dedicated to protecting our natural resources. In heavily developed areas like Long Island, golf courses offer large expanses of open space that provide environmental benefits, such as allowing water to infiltrate into the ground naturally and providing habitat for native species such as bees and butterflies. To help manage golf courses in harmony with the environment, the state's golf industry has established a comprehensive best management practices program to educate and serve as a resource for superintendents. For more information, see our website at nysgolfbmp.cals.cornell.edu.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family featuring three different models designed for the better player to our JPX family featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
And we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese. I'm Anthony, and he's Steve. And on the line is Stuart Hagestad as he gets ready for a little migration out east to Southampton to play with some of the best in the world. What are you, what's your game plan for this week as you start to formulate in your mind what you want to do and what you want to accomplish?
Goals for myself, I guess we'll say.
Yep.
Yeah, so... how do I say this in a politically correct yet also honest way? I think what Hoffler did in whatever year it was, whenever he was like 15. 16,
oh, 2000. That was 2012 at Olympic.
Yeah.
Is it that long ago?
Yes.
Yeah. Lord, he's like an adult now. So, you know, what he did back then is pretty special. And it's more than capable of, like, listen, he didn't finish the way that he wanted to, and we won't get into that. But, like, he legitimately put himself in contention. Like, he hit fairways. Like, he did things that any good player is very capable of doing. He hit fairways. He hit greens. Like, he prepared the best way he could to give himself the best chance to play well. And I think Spieth ended up catching him for Lowland, but that's neither here nor there. You got to keep your standards really high. It doesn't matter if you're playing against literally Tiger or Phil or whoever. It's going to come off and it's going to seem cocky and arrogant, but if you prepare, as I alluded to earlier, like if you prepare, like, you know, I just want to go out and have a great week. Like, no, like you're not going to give yourself the chance to play well. There's a big difference between preparing to win and preparing to have a cool week. Right. So I'm in the process, even still, as I say this, of, you know, committing in my head and genuinely believing your game is more than good enough to compete on the weekend and to be in one of those final groups and to stir up some noise and to maybe be in the mix on Sunday.
So it's way more than just happy to be there.
Oh, yeah, you have to be. You have to be. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, it's like, yes, you obviously, you know, it's good to, you know, remain humble and you should, you know, like it's an amazing experience and opportunity. But at the same time, like, you didn't try and qualify just to be there. You tried to qualify, you know, to compete, to try and win. Like, I don't know what I'm ranked in the world. I don't really care. It's like I can hit 300-yard drives that go straight. I can hit long irons, you know, where I'm looking. Like, I've played golf a long, long time. And, you know, I played with a lot of guys on the Walker Cup team, you know, that are, like, Colin Morikawa nearly won, you know, a web.com event, you know, as an amateur. Obviously, there's a small talent gap, but nonetheless, what I'm trying to allude to is, like, if I go out and, you know, I play to the game that I'm capable of, you know, I think it's absolutely possible that I'm going to go out and, you know, give myself an opportunity to win coming down on Sunday.
Now,
and again, like, I'm not sitting here and I'm not saying, like, you know, I'm projecting I'm going to go out and win or anything like that. But if you don't genuinely believe that in your head, you're already starting behind the eight ball.
Yeah, no, I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, listen, we all remember even when Arnold Palmer was in his last hurrah at Oakmont. When his first press conference was, I expect, you know, he even said he expected to win. I mean, that, like, he came here to win. I mean, that's what champions do. I mean, they don't, it's all about self-belief. How much experience do you have at Shinnecock?
Gosh, I've played it, it's funny, I've probably played it more than most of the field. You know, I've only played it three times. I played nine the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I touched them all yesterday. I played all 18. But, you know, I've seen the coverage of, obviously, 2004, and I think it was 96. And I've spent, of those three rounds, I've spent a lot of time out there just, you know, seeing breaks and, you know, seeing greens and where to hit it and where not to. And it's not as much as I did for Augusta, but, you know, at the same time, like you can play a course as many times as you want. You know, a lot of times the rough isn't up to your knees, and you know, like it wasn't in U.S. Open condition. So, we're getting there.
Now you're from Southern California, but you've been in the New York area long enough that we could call you a Met area golfer.
And I would love
that. And you went to Canoe Brook to qualify on golf's longest day, which I can't possibly imagine what playing 36 holes, trying to hit the ball while you still have that thought in the back of your head, you know, if you play well enough, you're going to play in the U.S. Open. And yet your two rounds could not have been, and even the rounds themselves could not have been more compartmentalized. You know, you birdie five of the last seven to shoot 70 in the first round. Then all of a sudden you come out, you make 11 pars and then four birdies in the last seven holes to shoot 66 and then make the cut. I can't possibly imagine, how were you able to sort of, you know, be able to flip that switch and be able to just, you know, play even better golf than what you were playing before?
Yeah. So I don't know. I have this weird self-belief thing that when the bright lights are on, I start to play better. Like I hope there's a bunch of listeners that, 'cause what I'm about to say, they're going to like this. Like, you know, when they're in the gym or they're playing horse or they're playing beer pong and, you know, there's one cup left and you need to tie it. Like, I enjoy that moment. So, like, having my back up against the wall, like, I'm such a 27-year-old to totally compare qualifying for the US Open to beer pong.
Right.
Idiots too.
No, that's all right.
No, so, like, I enjoy having that feeling of, you know, having, like, there's nothing to lose and your back is against the wall. But at the same time, like, you know, the lights are on and you're – all those emotions that you talk about, you know, of, you know, just anxiety and – just complete adrenaline and everything that goes with it. Like, that's a really fun feeling. That's why you practice, and that's what makes this really fun. I didn't play that well in the morning. I really hit it poorly on the front nine, and you know, on the back, it was just kind of like, okay, hey, you got a long day ahead. Plenty of stuff can happen. Just go out there and hit fairways in one shot at a time, and try and give yourself some looks and keep it stress free. And that's really what ended up happening. I totally made the most out of that morning round. I scored really well. I did everything I could to give myself a chance in the afternoon. And that's when it kind of changed. You know, like I just talked about, like, you begin to feel that anxiety and to feel that if you go out and shoot 400 or 500, you're probably going to go to the U.S. Open. Like, I was thinking about it all day.
Yeah.
You know, and when I began to kind of feel those nerves, I'm sure it allowed me just maybe to focus a little bit more, to kind of lock in a little bit more, and it allowed me to play a little bit better. I don't know why that is or how that is. I'm not a sports psychologist or anything. I believe in myself that, you know, when the bright lights turn on, I get a little bit better.
Stuart, one last one for me. I read a quote after you finished, and you said playing at Canoe Brook, you said, "I love the MGA and this style of golf." Can you kind of summarize in maybe a minute what you mean by that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I stand by that. I love the MGA in this area. I lived in New York for 3 years, and I love that feel of tree-lined golf where the greens are just so perfect, and, you know, the manicured to a tee. And I think even the middle-of-the-road golf courses, and I'm not going to say, like, you know, anything like that, but, like, what is seen in this area as a pedestrian golf course or middle-of-the-road is elite in any other place in the country besides maybe, like, Philadelphia, Chicago. Like, it's amazing. And the amount of pride that this area takes in their golf is incredible. And I went out of my way, like, I didn't want to qualify on the West Coast. I wanted to do it back in, you know, Canoe Brook, one, because I have to be here for the next week, but two, I've played the golf course before. I love it. I love the people that are around. I just feel a sense of home and belonging back here after having stayed here. And I really feel comfortable. I just, it's a great spot and a great area, and I didn't even think twice about it.
I think we can adopt Stuart as one of our own.
Yes, I would be happy to sponsor that.
Okay.
Stuart,
thank you so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate the insights. I really like what you said about Canoe Brook, because I think golfers don't understand that sometimes you have to let golf come to you, and you seem to have let golf come to you, which enabled you to do what you needed to do to qualify. And so we wish you all the best this weekend, and we'll be rooting for you no matter what.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Best of luck.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That was Stuart Hagestad. We're out of time, folks. That's the music. We're done. Have a great week.